Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you meet Christians all the time who say that they're putting their faith in God, but when you listen to them long enough, it sounds like they're really putting their faith in their pastors and their churches. Their pastors are ordained men of God, seminary graduates. And after a while, you realize that as Christians talk, claiming to be quoting their Bibles, they're really quoting their pastors or quoting some passage in the Bible as their pastor explained it to them. Should this be the case? Well, here to discuss this provocative subject with me is my good friend and co-host who always shows up on our board as Papa Jarvis, but his name is Greg Jarvis. Greg, welcome to our program.
Yeah, hi there, Bob. Thank you very much. Glad to be on. And you can call me Greg. You can call me Papa.
Where does Papa Whatever. Come from? I mean, I know you have kids.
That's what they call me. That's what I've had them call me. Now, why it shows up that way on the phone, I've never been able to understand that because other places I call, it does that too. So it's kind of comical because...
Is it like a miracle? Like people that see the Virgin Mary in places? Is that what it is?
Well,
I always thought you just told Nick that that's what you wanted him to type and that's what he typed.
No, that's just what comes up. So I'm not blue or anything like Papa Smurf, but that's fine. Papa Jarvis works just fine for me.
Well, good, because I remember my kids grew up on the Smurfs, and I've got to say the particular charm of that program seemed to be elusive to me.
Well, that's not surprising. I didn't really see it either. I did like the little blue people, though, but that was about as far as I got with it.
I didn't like the blue people. I didn't like the obnoxious voices. I just didn't care for it.
Hey, now wait a minute. This is going to feed right into our topic today.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Well, now first of all, how are you doing? Because you were sick there for a little bit.
I was. They thought I had pneumonia, and they treated me as if I had it. But when the x-ray came in, it wasn't pneumonia. I'd be darned if I know what it was, but I am feeling much better either way. So
Good. Whatever
they did, it worked.
Good. Glad to hear it. Glad you're feeling better. Well, so for today's topic, you had mentioned about people following the teaching of their pastor or quoting a verse, how it was couched and taught to them rather than maybe looking at scripture, but taking that other step. The concern I had, and it came through reading one particular story, and I'll share that in a minute, but the concern, and I'm sure I've done it, and I really like, one, for us to be aware that it goes on, and then two, how can we combat that? And that is handling situations one of two ways. When we run into whether it's a non-Christian or a Christian, a lot of times we will either embrace the person and kind of discard an ethic that we believe in or that we were taught with the case.
Discard it because we're thinking this is somebody beyond reproach. So if we see a problem, we figure we must be imagining things, that kind of idea?
Oh, no. No, this wouldn't be the person teach or anything like that. This would be someone on the street that we run into.
Whether it's a brother
or a sister. And so in order to accept not today a lot of times, it's accepting everything about them, we discard ethics. Now, the other way of handling it, which I think is equally off the mark, and that is seeing the ethic and discarding the person and you know, calling them out, pointing a finger, and discarding them and going another way. Both of those are not good approaches, and they're not biblical approaches. They're not appropriate approaches, but I know I've done it in my life. And the story, you'll know, it's the woman that was caught in adultery. And so
whom Jesus rescued.
They brought her to him. So,
Greg, so, you keep cutting out. Yeah. I know we've had this problem before. Are you on a cell phone by any chance or a remote phone?
I'm on a cell, but I'm not moving around. So
okay. Well, you sound okay right now. Just hold as still as you can. But there have been several times now where you've cut out. And
okay. I will hold this position for the next hour.
There you go. There you go.
I'll just call it yoga, and that'll
well, don't work. Call it yoga, because we don't... That would get into a whole different religious viewpoint that we don't share on this program. So.
Right. That's a whole other topic
yes,
for another
time. Yes,
it is.
It is another topic for another time.
Okay, well, let's discuss the woman that was brought to Jesus, caught in adultery, and they're wanting to stone her to death, mainly because they didn't care about her. They just wanted to catch Jesus, whereas if he was going to say, no, don't stone her, well, then they'd got him because it's not going by the law in the Old Testament. And if he said, absolutely stone her, then it's like, whoa, now they've got him, they can report him to the Roman authorities.
Because they didn't have the authority to stone anybody under the Romans anyway.
Exactly.
Although the Romans were known to look the other way when a mob violence got out of control, such as with the stoning of Stephen.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But either way, they thought they caught, you know, they caught Jesus in the middle. And so either way, he's kind of in a pickle. But he, as always, sees his way through it. And whatever he was writing in the dust, you know, that and then telling them, let whoever's without sin here, go ahead, you cast the first stone.
Which means and he was probably listing a bunch of sins in the dust, and people were seeing their own on the list.
That's what I would think. And so one by one they leave. And he looks up, he gets up and asks her, is there nobody here? Where are your accusers? Are they gone? She said, they're gone. So no one condemns you. And she says, no. He goes, well, I don't condemn you either. And some people would want to stop there and think, see, we shouldn't be condemning people, and which I agree. But then he goes on to tell her, now go and sin no more.
Yes, so he wasn't excusing her sin at all. He was just treating her in a compassionate way.
Absolutely. And I think that right there is the key of how we want to learn to treat people today, where we can be compassionate, be merciful, never discarding the truth, but not discarding the person either. And I think that is a tricky line to walk for a lot of people. I think it's much easier for people to judge or condemn or to bend their theology. You know, either way, don't you think that happens a lot today?
Yeah, it certainly does.
And so what I'm grappling with is how can we consistently do that, to do both, to hang on to one and to hang on to the other. And allow the person then, if anyone's going to be doing the discarding, that it would be the person, either discarding the truth that we bring or discarding us, but not us doing the discarding.
Right.
So that's, I don't know, that's kind of the, and I think you see that, I think we see this through scripture. Most importantly, I think we see it in our own lives. I mean, God didn't discard us. And he had every right to. But through Christ, he pays the penalty, and then he holds on to us, and he holds on to who he is. Doesn't let go of either one.
Yes, so, which is a good thing, because if God was going to give us what we actually deserve, none of us would be here.
Right. Right. And I probably would be one of the first to go. So I'm really glad.
I don't think I'd be too far behind you.
Probably not. I mean, I think I might. You might see me go, and then it might be a little ways before you, your turn. But and so I just thought we could discuss some of the doctrines that that catch people up. That I mean, it's not always a doctrine, too. Sometimes it's just an idea or an attitude. I remember when my kids were little. I never even taught them this, but when my kids were little, they were like, oh, that person's not a good person. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They smoke. I was taken aback because I'm like, these are my little babies. What are they talking about? This person's smoking.
Yeah, and given where our culture's headed, I think somebody smoking is the least of the problems we have today.
Oh, absolutely. But I just, it took me aback because I had never taught them that. I didn't know where they came up with that.
They probably heard it in Sunday school, Greg.
Well, possibly, but I don't know that I ever saw any flannel graphs with little smokers.
Oh, remember those flannel graphs? Well, we're really dating ourselves now.
But now maybe there should be flannel graphs with little smokers and little people jumping rope.
Little blue Smurf flannel graphs.
Well, that would be lost, obviously, on a few people, namely you.
Yes.
So maybe not. But there's things like that that we make up ourselves that are preferential to us, and we choose to sidestep people because of them. And then there's things we don't make up. We actually take doctrine from Scripture, and we use that to discard people.
Or doctrine that we think we're getting from Scripture, perhaps.
Yes, and that's real dangerous ground right there. Because I'm convinced if Jesus came today and he sat in a lot of churches and started talking about things, a lot of people go, whoa, wait a minute.
Oh, he'd have a hard time. Somebody would tell him he's not truly worshiping because he's not lifting up his hands in praise, or there'd be something he believed that wasn't going along with the doctrine. Okay, hold that thought. We will be right back.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Thank you.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Co-hosting today, my good friend, Greg Jarvis. Greg, welcome back to our program.
Bob, good to be back. So we were talking about kind of a lopsided way of approaching people, a lopsided way of interacting. And I think what's on the move today is there's becoming more and more, the lopsidedness seems to be discarding the ethic to hang on to the person.
Well, we do hear this a lot, like if a Christian speaks against same-sex marriage or speaks against the religion of Islam, we're told that we don't have any compassion, when actually we could have great compassion for both people groups, but just disagree with their beliefs.
And so you're confronted with that, I'm sure, from time to time,
yes,
with things that you've written, talked about,
yeah,
whatever.
Absolutely.
How do you walk that line then, where you are not letting go of either one, where you're embracing truth and you're embracing the individual?
Well, to start with, I'm a big believer in disclaimers. So I'll say right up front, if I'm having such a conversation, that none of this has anything to do with any lack of respect for you as a person. And I'll turn it back on them too, because if somebody says, well, if you disagree with homosexuality, that means you hate gays. I say, well, wait a minute. The very fact that you're having this conversation with me shows that you are disagreeing with a very clear teaching of Christianity. Am I to take that to mean that you hate Christians? And they'll immediately disavow that. No, of course I don't hate Christians. I say, well, okay, well, then why can't it work both ways? Why are you able to disagree with me without being accused? And I'll tell them, I haven't been accusing you of hatred. Why don't you extend to me the same courtesy? Oftentimes when we put it back in their court, they can see a little more objectively.
Okay. So starting the conversation with a disclaimer.
It can help. It can be very helpful, because otherwise there's going to be a misunderstanding, or it's going to come up. You might as well put all the cards on the table right at the beginning.
Sure. It can be disarming on the one hand, or at the very least, it can be informative. And at least cause someone to think or realize, hey, this person, that, because without a disclaimer, there's a whole lot of assumptions, like the person has said, well, you hate people who are gay. And an assumption a lot of times when people talk to a Christian is that the Christian thinks they're right. Christian has all the answers. They think that I'm, you know, this, that, or the other. And they have a lot of assumptions right off the bat. But if there's some disclaimers to sort of set the tone, then that seems like that could be a very good thing.
Yeah, and they not only are in the impression that Christians think they're right, but that Christians think they're perfect, and that they somehow in their minds think that what we're teaching is that we as Christians have achieved this set of morality that you haven't achieved. And they don't understand that it's actually the opposite message, that we don't think we've achieved anything, that we think all of us as human beings have failed before God, and we're here to proclaim his grace that I don't deserve, you don't deserve, nobody deserves. It's a whole different conversation from what they think we're believing.
Yeah. And I think some of us Christians need to be well-versed in being able to do that, because I think sometimes we further that image or we further that thought by our actions, our attitudes, and what we're trying to tell people, not so much maybe what we're trying to tell them, but how we're telling them.
And we've got to be willing to take the time too. I remember one time I was out with Dana, and I was on my way to get to one of our favorite ice cream places in La Jolla. I say our favorite, we hardly ever go there, but I was really looking forward to that ice cream cone. And sure enough, there were some people that were trying to overturn Proposition 8, which has since been overturned by the courts anyway, which here in California had declared it a law that marriage is between a man and a woman. And I just said, I voted for Proposition 8. He goes, well, you don't believe in equality? And I said, well, it's a little more complicated than that. And then I walked away, and I never in my life, Greg, felt so guilty eating ice cream. I'm sitting here thinking, probably nothing I said to that guy made any sense to him. And I gave up what could have been a significant conversation for a stupid ice cream cone. So I got up. I said, we got to go back. And I did. I went back out to him on the street. I said, you know what? I shouldn't have made a quick comment and then walked off. And then we ended up having a very intelligent, because it was a very in-context conversation. But sometimes we've got to be willing to be a little bit inconvenienced to put in that extra effort.
Right, right. But the main point you're making, I think, is that you got to have your ice cream and eat it too. Right.
Well, in this case, I had my ice cream and I ate it too, rather than my cake. Yeah.
Okay.
But it is funny the conversations you can have. There was another time I was over at Grossmont Center, one of our malls here in San Diego. And this was another one. Only this was a young college-age woman this time, some undergrad. And, oh, we're here to overturn Proposition 8. I said, well, I voted for Proposition 8. She goes, oh, that's okay, honey. We'll forgive you. A lot of people have come back and apologized. I said, no, you don't understand. I'm not apologizing for anything. But it's just, it's amazing the way you get pegged when things are set out of context that quickly.
Well, you know, with your first interchange after the ice cream, the other thing that makes that, I think, stand out is that you went back. And I think it may not have been the same conversation had you not left and then come back. Because when you came back, you were actually presenting a humble side of things.
Yeah. I think you're right. Because the fact that I came back showed that I was willing to be reflective. And in a way, I was apologizing for just making a comment and walking off. And I think that really did make a difference to the guy.
I totally think that happened. And I think if we don't have those opportunities and there is no, it's not a leave and come back kind of thing. I think we often need to hear a person. I think that is another way that people respond well. You have your disclaimers, you set the ground rules, you come back if you've left, you apologize. That kind of sets a tone. The other tone that can be set is if we become initially good listeners, a lot of times we have too much or so much to say and have such strong opinions about whatever it is that we're more about us getting across our message than really hearing what that person has to say. And that goes a long way when you listen.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I really learned my lesson, but I don't think I've ever been as hungry as I am right now for a banana split. So I'm not sitting here salivating about having another one of those conversations. So I'm not sure how much I took away from that. All right. Well, I'll figure out how much I took away from it when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
People are enjoying Bob Siegel's time travel novel, Push the Winds Around. Check out these customer reviews on Amazon.com. This is one of those books, like certain movies, where you keep thinking about it long after you finished. Once I picked it up, I didn't want to put it down until I'd read the entire book. Literally, a page turner. Every character came to life. Their personalities were well-defined and consistent. First thing I did after I finished the book was to ask about the sequel. The next customer said, "I read this book cover to cover in one sitting. Great read with completely unexpected ending that left me wishing there was just one more chapter. Give yourself a couple of hours to read it all at once because you won't want to put it down." Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Segal Show. I'm joined with co-host this week, Greg Jarvis.
Yeah, I think I just threw my knee out trying to dance to that music, so I'm going to sit down now.
That is the music from La La Land. I can finally make the claim that I'm not playing something from 20, 30 years ago, because that movie came out in 2016.
Yeah, welcome to the present. Way to go.
Hey, we had to get there sooner or later, didn't we?
Yeah, well, you made it. So, I mean, that's fine. Later's fine. Sooner's overrated anyway. That's okay. So listening to people, I think, gets a lot of mileage. And truly listening, I don't just mean waiting your turn to say what you want to say, but really listening to someone and reasoning through with them. And I don't know that we are taught that a lot. In our groups or in our churches or in settings, I think a lot of times we're taught doctrine and the main core beliefs, let's say, and not so much. I think it's taken for granted that everyone should be able to just talk. And I remember in college being terrified getting up in front of a class to do a speech. I hated that. And not everyone is well-versed. Not everyone's gifted to talk. And really, I think sometimes there's just a few simple things that we can give to people along with truth that'll help them to discuss this with somebody else. Do you find that some of that is being given and taught, how to approach people, how to talk to people, just in general, in churches?
Well, there are at times classes on evangelism training, even though I understand you're not talking only about an evangelistic situation. We could stand some communication skills just in learning how to talk to our brothers and sisters. I'd have to say that whereas it's taught in places, it probably is not taught nearly enough.
Because I think what happens a lot of times, at least in my own experience, what I grapple with is, I don't know, I'm probably the only one, but I want to be right. I want to be right. I want to be right with God. I want to be right in a conversation. That's where I want to be. And so if I can have my ducks all lined up, then I'm okay, right? And that is not right. That's not how I see Jesus. Nobody had ducks like Jesus, right?
He had the finest Palestinian ducks.
Absolutely, those Palestinian ducks.
Kosher ducks cooked on a kosher rotisserie.
Kosher ducks all in a row.
All in a row. Right? There we go.
Yeah, sounds like a song or a poem there somewhere in the working.
Something in there. Well, I think it's okay to want to be right. Obviously, it's okay to want to be right with God. What's the alternative to want to be wrong? The trick and where we start derailing is when it starts coming to our attention that we were not in the right and we're not forthcoming about admitting that. That's where it becomes a problem. And if we're telling ourselves, sometimes if a person says, I must be right, then they'll start telling themselves that they are right, even when they're not. And that could lead to an inability to confess their sin. Ironically, learning to confess our sin and being honest about ourselves is how this all began in the first place. Without that, we would not have found Christ. And all too often, people start as honest Christians, defining a Christian as one who's forgiven of their sin, but then they start trying to behave like Christians, with the capital C, instead of behaving like forgiven sinners, instead of continuing as they started.
That's an excellent point. Giving up our first love, giving up what you just said, how we started, and then once we start and we feel completely different and life changes and attitudes change, like you say, we then start building. It's like we start building a wall almost built out of these bricks that we learn, truths here and there. And it's funny how quickly we can get away from that, and then how we forget. All the way down the road, we forget how it was when we first started and lean more on what we think we know and how right we think we are, rather than leaning on actual good self-reflection and being in relationship with someone to help us do that, leaning on the Spirit and leaning on God. I mean, and I mentioned this on the last show, we make it more about us than about God, as opposed to sharing what God's done or is doing. I remember good friend Ray Whitbeck. You remember Ray?
Oh, I know Ray. Yep.
In our Bible study in college, and before I really knew him very well, but I was in the Bible study group, and I went that very first time, and I thought, you know, I just want to go. We're just going to read. That's fine. I do not want to be asked about God or anything. I know Peter, get to the group, and it's just him right away. He's the earliest. I'm next. And he says, hey, so Greg, what's God been doing in your life?
Exactly what I didn't want to hear.
Exactly what I didn't want to hear. But we need that, because if we don't have that, then we do make it all about us. We don't make it about what's God doing in our life that we can then be a witness to. A lot of times, what we're sharing with people, we're not witnesses to. We're sharing truths that we've learned from other people or that we've read about, that sometimes they don't have personal meaning or application. That they do have the application, but we haven't applied them. But we believe it, and so we're saying it. And it's like, well, this is meant to be a reality in your life, and we want to share, you know, what we're going through. And that doesn't mean that we've gone through or will go through every single doctrinal teaching. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is sometimes we get a theology in our head and all of our quote-unquote ducks in a row that don't connect with us, don't connect with the other person.
And theology is a tricky thing, because we can have the correct theology but be portraying it in a very unloving way. And we can also have an incorrect theology, which is another whole host of problems. Okay, we'll be right back. Looking for a church that will not only challenge you but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. but you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Back to 1170 The Answer. This is Bob Siegel and Greg Jarvis.
But carrying it in an inappropriate or ineffectual way. But then we can also have wrong theology. But we can also have right theology that we put on a shelf, or that we soften, or that we kind of couch so that we can feel closer to an individual. And I'm not advocating that. But I think there, especially today, there are some doctrines that people are real uncomfortable with, that shy away from, try to excuse, or just flat out reject, which, of course, that causes me to wonder about the relationship with God to begin with, because I don't see how we can just outright reject certain things that are...
Which doctrines would you say people are uncomfortable with or try to distance themselves from?
That's a good question. I was thinking maybe you would have some. I know people don't like to talk about hell.
Yeah, that was the one that came to my mind. That's a big one.
Sin, and then you can fill in the blank as to what sins. You already brought up gay lifestyle, let's say. And I know you debated a gentleman on your show before, and there's folks that believe that it's okay. The Bible doesn't teach against it. I don't really understand that, but that's a whole other thing. Then there's people that, I'm just going to have to live with this and just not act on it. And then other people that think, no, I can be changed. And, you know, but there's all kinds of different approaches. But whether it's that topic, or whether people bring up their own smoking or drinking too much, or another one, Jesus being the only way, are you kidding me? Come on. And it's like, well, those, you know, people don't like to lead with those, or even hear about those or discuss them with people, you know.
Yeah.
And that's not something that I feel we can put aside.
Absolutely not. Are you up for a question from a caller, Greg?
Oh, sure. Yeah, me? Are you kidding?
I believe he has a question for both of us, but we'll go ahead and put him on. 1-888-344-1170. Tim, welcome to our program.
Hey, Tim. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Bob, I know you have a guest on, so it's a little unusual to take a call, but I really do appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
My question is, if you're engaging other people who think or believe differently than you, and you're asking them to consider to change their mind towards your way of thinking, are you engaging in that discussion with the same open-mindedness to change your own mind as you're asking them to be, in the spirit of authenticity and intellectual honesty?
It would depend on the conversation. If we're talking about a subject that in dealing with a question that I do not know the answer to, or a subject where we just know that there's no way to get at the truth, that would be one thing. Certainly if I'm talking about Christianity and I'm talking to somebody who tells me that the Bible may not be the Word of God, no, I am not open to that. I was certainly open to that at one time, though, and I believe I can challenge that person to be open now. And my consistency, my intellectual consistency, would be that back when I was in their shoes, before I had yet examined it for myself, I was at that time open to both possibilities.
Couldn't someone make the exact same claim in the opposite direction, say, used to think like you, however, I think differently now, and I know I'm right, and therefore I'm not willing to consider that I'm wrong.
Yeah, they could, and they often do, but where we put our cards on the table is I say, well, now what do you have to back that up? If somebody says, I've come to the conclusion, I was in an open debate with a guy one time that said I used to be a Christian, and I now know that God doesn't exist. I know that. And I said to him in front of the audience, you know that how exactly? And he didn't know. And he finally had to say, okay, well, I don't know. I think it's unlikely that God exists. Greg, did you want to answer that from your own point of view?
No. Because I'm not that terrific at answering questions. I'm really just, a foot shuffler and looking down at the ground. But, I think what you're saying is, when we approach people, that it may seem a little disingenuous to appear to be having an open discussion. I think that's what I'm hearing. And isn't that what we really want if we're sitting down with someone? I think that's the atmosphere that we go for. And like Bob mentioned, on certain topics, that's possible. When it comes to, it's kind of like people value the search for truth. But once you say you found truth, they don't value that. And so it's hard if you had gone to a certain place, but if you have the reasoning that got you there and the experiences that got you there, then I think that makes the difference. I think we can still be, and I think this is where the struggle is, still be as open as possible to that person and their experience, and not discounting or discrediting what they're going through, what they believe, what they feel, what they think. And we can share where we're coming from, but not steamroll them as if we have absolute truth and that they really don't count or matter. I think that's sometimes how those conversations go. And I think that's probably as close as we could get to having an open conversation and to genuinely discuss the issues that someone raises. Because I've been in conversations where someone raises an honest question and someone else will just shoot it down with something that doesn't even make sense. And it's like, hey, you're not dialoguing with them. You're just, and so I would kind of reiterate what Bob had mentioned. If it's this topic, well, that's a little different. But you'd still want to be as supportive and as open, as encouraging as you can.
Isn't it true that if we got off of religion, there are certain topics, for instance, Tim, if somebody said, I'm working to bring back the Confederate States of America, and I don't think slavery was such a bad thing, I'm sure you would argue the point, and I doubt that you would be saying to yourself at that point, I am just as open to having him convince me that slavery is okay, as I hope he's open to me convincing him that slavery isn't okay.
Well, I think that's a great analogy. And I think Greg kind of picked up on the point I was trying to make, was sometimes when people are having a discussion and say, hey, let's talk about this, they present it in such a way as if it's supposed to be a two-way street, as if both sides have something to offer and both sides might be able to share something with the other that might convince them of some greater truth, where in reality, it's not being honest about that. It's one side is, I'm not going to change my mind no matter what you say. I'm here to change your mind, and this is really a one-sided interaction.
Well, it depends on how we set it up. If we say, let's talk about this, but we're not saying, giving any comment about how open we are. We're just saying, let's be a forum where we're each free to express ourselves. And we're each going to give latitude and respect the fact that each person can express themselves. And we're going to share our viewpoints in a friendly, respectful way. That's not giving any guarantee about how open or closed your mind is. Once again, I think that depends on the subject, because if the subject was slavery, that would not be the case. But would you agree, Tim, that we can have respectful conversations even without necessarily feeling obligated to agree?
I think we're doing it now, and I appreciate the conversation.
All right, my friend. Thank you for calling in. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. I've been on the radio for many years, but let me tell you about a voice I've learned to appreciate far more than any radio announcers, Fred Falduti of Realty Executives All Area. Now, why do I care so much about Fred's voice? Because not long ago, Fred's voice spoke the following words to me.
Bob, I have some good news for you. They accepted your offer.
That's right. Fred Falduti just sold my house. With words like those, who needs radio? Folks, I'm telling you, choosing the right realtor is no small task. Fred took a personal interest in my situation, treating me less like a customer and more like a member of the family. And Fred's been doing this since 1994. Realty Executives All Area has sold thousands of homes locally.
Our footprints are throughout San Diego County, and we are proud of our accomplishments of assisting home sellers and buyers like you. Over the years, we've managed hundreds of real estate transactions and have encountered just about every kind of challenging situation possible.
That's it, folks. That's the voice that will sell your home. Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com. We radio hosts love to talk, but let's face it, when have we ever sold your home? Fred Falduti will.
Check out these terrific customer reviews for Bob Siegel's science fiction novel, Push the Winds Around. Another winner from Mr. Siegel. I've always loved the time travel stories, and this one takes a creative approach. Like H.G. Wells' classic, it delves into morals and metaphysics. And as any good time travel mystery, it leaves you satisfied while raising questions at the same time. Here's another review. Quick, thought-provoking, enjoyable read. And just one more. My kind of book. Adventure, fun, excitement, suspense, time travel, love, and a day at the beach. What's not to like? A great book to lose yourself in. Happy reading. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
It's good to hear from our friend Tim. Greg, Tim is, he calls our show from time to time, and I would say he's a very good example of one who can call in. He and I have disagreed on many things, but always very respectfully.
Well, I'm really glad he chose to call in on this show because I think that the topic is very important, and I like what he was saying. I think sometimes when we sit down as Christians to talk to anybody, sometimes it comes from a closed system, and like he said, that it may feel like we're just there, not really open, and that's true. I mean, if someone told you the cure for cancer and it cured you, chances are you're not going to be open about it not being a cure to cancer, okay? But you can still be open in your discussion with someone. I think, you know, and I was talking earlier about techniques to talk to people, and you had mentioned a disclaimer, and I had mentioned listening. you know, it's not just the subject of Christianity, but sometimes when people are engaged in conversations, they're not really engaged.
Exactly. And we can be open. There's different kinds of openness. We may know where we stand, but we can be open to the fact that we're talking to somebody that, and there's something very important that they would like to share. It's important for them to have the catharsis of sharing it. And that's another kind of openness right there. Just to be willing to listen and say, I hear you. I see where you're coming from. I don't necessarily agree, but I appreciate the fact that you shared your opinion, and I was truly listening to you while you were sharing it.
See, and I think that a lot of times is what's missing in a lot of conversations. A lot of times listening, quote unquote listening, is really just waiting until your turn to talk. And that happens all too often, and that can come across in a conversation. Listening to what the person is saying, then dialoguing is taking what that person is saying, giving back to them what you hear them saying, and even finding some sort of common ground if it exists, and then your turn to talk and share something and for you know what you're sharing. And,
and there is sometimes common ground too, even though on the main issue we may not be agreeing. There, a lot of times people are agreeing, as for instance, to what the problem is, but they're disagreeing on how to get there. That's how that happens all the time in politics. Democrats get up and say, well, we care about the poor, the Republicans don't. Well, that's not true. The Republicans care about the poor too. They don't believe government is the way to get at that problem. Democrats do. But if they could start by saying, okay, we both agree that the poor is an issue. We both agree that something should be done. That could just add so much goodwill to find the things that we have in common before immediately jumping into what we don't have in common.
Right. And I think that is where most people start, is the lack of commonality. And then it turns into a real broken discussion. If it gets to that point at all. Now my concern, I mean, I really am glad that he had brought that up, because that's a huge part of conversation. Along with that, even if we are good listeners and we truly are sharing and listening and going back and forth, I still am a little concerned that we do tend to soften or even reject at times certain doctrines like hell, or that Jesus is the only way. How can that be true? Or just as bad, we reject people based on whatever, when most of the people that were rejected in Christ's day were the ones that he went to. Those were the ones he went around and talked.
Yeah, those that were the refuse of that society, Jesus actually gravitated toward.
Yeah, and today, those are the ones we're like, I'm gonna have these discussions and talks with people like myself, and then we'll argue or we'll discuss our points, and so it's sometimes we're kind of going about it with the wrong people, even, I think.
Well, this brings us back a little bit to where I started today, in that the people that were the religious leaders of those days, the people were kind of blindly following them. And Jesus was challenging them to look to their own relationship with God, because some of these leaders were very flawed.
Yes, that is absolutely key. It's huge. And I wish, that's a whole other show, because that is exactly what they did. It's unfortunate. And that's where it all comes down to. It is the relationship with Christ.
Okay, my friend, always a pleasure and an honor to chat with you.
Well, Bob, thank you so much, and thanks for Tim calling in, and you take care.
All right, we'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.